And we're back, Potato Report, 89.5 FM, CIUT, joined by Phil Conlon. How are you doing, Phil?
I'm doing well.
Phil, on them, let's talk about the crisis. We've reached the number now, everybody seems to agree, 20,000 dead in Gaza. Almost half of them children. And another big number is journalists. It's a really high number. I think, you know, everybody likes to do comparisons, but most of the comparisons are saying these are sort of off the charts for the number of journalists who are dying in trying to cover the Gaza war. They're probably the wrong kind of journalists. As far as I know, for the most part, they are from places like Al Jazeera and elsewhere. But there have been, I think every major news agency has lost somebody. So
that's right. There are also local Gazans who are journalists. I mean, Gaza is a functioning,
yes,
was a functioning society, and they have a journalist industry.
Yeah.
And their journalists were singled out for assassination. There is a number that was published today that says 97 journalists have been killed. I mean that is just an extraordinary number, you know. I think in the whole Vietnam War, it wasn't even a third of that for the entire period of the war, you know.
Well, they were embedded with the Americans, as you know.
Yeah.
We have this, I don't know why we ever tolerated, everybody should shout out being against the embedded journalist. An embedded journalist becomes an intellectual hostage of whatever officer and armed group he's with, and she or he. And it's really repulsive. And we should, it would be great to go back to a time when journalists used to fight back and say, I'm not going to be part of this. The fact is, this is something we could share with Taylor Report listeners, that the Vietnam War convinced the Pentagon that never again would they allow journalists to wander around and have opinions. They just made a rule. And same with taking pictures of American casualties, that kind of thing. It became verboten. So there's a bunch of horrible things happened that were not good in the reform days following the Vietnam War. There was a little honeymoon where everybody said we have to know more and get the facts, and war correspondents were lauded. But it didn't take long, particularly under Reagan, to get everybody back in order and say, from now on, basically, you better be a super patriot and you better write what we tell you to write. So that is not helping the situation. Now, I mentioned there are 20,000 dead. The numbers climb. We are at Christmas, I remind you. No Christmas in Bethlehem. And yet the bombing goes on. And I think we should address a couple of problems, or the way people talk about this war. It's called a war. For one thing, the armed group associated with the political group, the political group being Hamas, the armed group is with light arms, basically, primitive rockets, and not an actual army. And the Israeli army is one of the big armies of the world. It is armed with all the latest weapons. Noam Chomsky and others have pointed out that the weapons, all and every type of weapon, Israel has to have a superior weapon to every state and neighbor in the region. So they have all the advantage in terms of weaponry. They have an Air Force. They have a Navy. And then they have, of course, Uncle Sam's Navy and Britain's Navy. And looking into this, I noticed that a few years back, the British thought of closing two of their military bases in Cyprus, which is just off the coast. And the United States told them, do not close those bases. And the Brits said, well, actually, we can't afford them. So the Americans said, that's okay, we'll pay for it. So I don't know, when we talk about money spent in guaranteeing the military hegemony and advantage of Israel and its allies. And in this situation, the allies are the masters. This is a debate people have all the time. But the U.S. is the master of the situation. We spoke of it on the show previous, that, and Blinken just emphasized it again. He says, the world wants us to be there. The world wants us to be number one. And so all roads, as he used to say about Rome, all roads have to lead to Washington. Otherwise, it's a disaster. Total disaster. And so long as the Americans control all the discussions, weapons transfers, and guarantee the armament and security of Israel, it's America. It's Joe Biden. I don't know, you know, there's Bibi and Biden, but it's Biden's the boss. But in talking about what they're fighting, and this is where Biden, Blinken, Sullivan, Miller, I think I got them all. They keep saying that they have to defeat Hamas or destroy it. That is, strikes me as a, I don't know who they think they're kidding. I guess they're kidding each other or trying to kid us. Armed resistance by Palestinians and actually other Arab nationalities, states, goes all the way back to the Ottomans and the British and the French. The armed resistance will go on until you have a appropriate political settlement. Militarily, you may kill people in what they call the, I guess, the Al-Qassam Brigade. I don't know if you're going to get them. However, what you're fighting is a phantom, because there have been brigades wiped out before. And everybody said, oh, we got them. Well, we're only talking about a political phenomenon which says we will resist occupation. And the name of the people doing it will change. And by the way, the liars in Washington and Tel Aviv will play along too. It is a fact. Former Prime Minister Omer, former Prime Minister Bennett, or is it Barrett, of Israel, both affirm that at one point, billions of dollars, millions, certainly hundreds of millions of dollars, passed from Qatar to the Gaza Strip, to the Hamas leadership. And according to, I think it's Bennett, said in suitcases. And he said, what are these suitcases? He claims, this is his story. What's these suitcases? And they said, well, they're trying to bulk up Hamas in order to cause problems for the Palestinian group in the West Bank. So they want to create a split. So he claims that he said, no more suitcases. That was his position. So they knew who they were dealing with better than I do. And there are talks in Qatar, and now in Cairo with these this leadership. So I think we should remind everybody, or you're actually talking about a group has a name and you say you're going to get it. I don't know. I'm very skeptical about whether they'll actually succeed on that score. But the fact is, you haven't solved your problem. Or you have a phantom that you're giving a label to. Resistance is resistance. The British wiped out the various Irish fighters many times over and celebrated. And then they found a bunch more with a new name. Many of the same families. Anyway, so this is something, I think we ought to quit the baloney about this and say, look, let's just have a grown-up discussion. And the ceasefire should be permanent. And there should be a settlement of the matter. But we shouldn't be entertaining ideas that you can annihilate somebody. And the campaign to defeat this group, if we were to believe that's what it's about, is killing civilians and transferring them. If you blow the guy's house up, he's a refugee because he didn't have a house. And if you tell him he has to move, you're engaging in a transfer of population, and there's a name for that. I'm tired of wearing out all the worst epithets. I just say, you're using bombs and telling people to leave, blowing anything up, killing children in order to get people to move. All that is criminal. And the moral advantage has shifted away to your victims. They have the moral advantage. So we're faced with a situation where the only thing that matters to Washington is that it be treated like Rome. And this business about, well, they're isolated. They are isolated. Canada, by the way, is isolated along with them. But have you noticed that Britain, Canada, US, Germany, are happy to be isolated because they're colonizing powers and they really don't want anything to do with Arabs except as servants. But they have a hierarchy. In our case, Canada's a vassal. If it's any comfort to people, Germany is also a vassal. They've shown that. They had a pipeline, the Americans blew it up. And nobody even says, hey, what happened to the pipeline? You know, nobody asked. Forget it, happened. a place where there's a problem, in my opinion, in terms of analysis coming from Western progressives, so people call themselves anti-imperialists, is they all seem to be dancing long before the music has started. U.S. warships are all roaming all over the place. And the U.S. has targeted, and I hear nobody mention, they've targeted Syria. The U.S. has a base in Syria. That's occupation. They've actually occupied illegally in violation of the United Nations Charter, international law. They have occupied northeastern Syria. They take their oil. They sometimes burn wheat crops and sometimes take the wheat crops. They also have a base on the Jordan border with Syria. That's a U.S. military base. In my opinion, they are planning, they're hoping that there will be a tipping, some kind of, it's like a wrestler thinking, hoping his opponent will try to do something, will open up a possibility. They said they were going to overthrow President Assad. And they must have been serious, because even Trudeau said he thought Assad should go. And he never says that unless the boss says so. So he said, Assad's got to go. Assad did not go. And I read, I have Benjamin Netanyahu's new autobiography. And he's very proud that Trump let him have the Golan Heights. Now, he thinks he can have the Golan Heights in violation of treaties, laws, everything, because Trump said he could. There's even a Trump, some kind of big Trump sign, I understand, in the Golan Heights. But Syria went through a war and is still fighting terrorists who were sponsored by some of the Gulf states and Washington, killing Syrians. Remember those ghastly pictures, people having their throats cut. And it was all, and they said Syria's doomed. Two countries came to their aid, actually, materially, openly. One was Islamic Republic, whose capacity is probably almost akin to Israel. But the big one was Russia. Russia came to the aid of Syria. I don't really like to hear discussions going on here about, oh, the big crisis and the Arab masses and the people are demanding that the U.S. and Israel stop what's going on in Gaza, and not neglecting the subject of Syria, because two elements that could really get the job done are, I should say three, are the Islamic Republic, if they had to do it, and Russia. And they're both relatively quiet, and Syria itself, which withstood the blow. Remember what they did to Libya? They destroyed Libya, the most prosperous Arab country, which was sharing its wealth with Africa. They destroyed it, and they murdered the leader, much to the delight of Hillary Clinton. And then they said, if you remember his name, John McCain said, we're going to go and get Syria. He even landed in Syria. John McCain actually walked around on Syrian soil. So the shocking part, the hideous part, is that we don't talk about this stuff. It's the Americans. They're the ones driving the whole damn process. And the people fighting, the strongest resistance, is in Syria, in southern Lebanon, Iran, and Russia seems to have drawn a line saying, we're staying here, and we're not going to allow the removal of Assad. I'm not saying it's number one issue. It's just, I don't understand how every people kind of in a creepy way talk about West Asia, Middle East, / and neglect this very important matter. And many do say, well, oh, Syria should jump in and fight. Syria has a rough row to hoe, and they've done their job and are doing it. Some say, oh, where, how about Hezbollah? Hezbollah has a rough row to hoe, but they're holding their ground. They're perfectly capable of defending themselves, but they're not damn fools. They are ready to go if the U.S. and Israel want to see if they can come ashore, as it were. Anyway, that element should be reminded, because you have Egypt, which is not, you know, it's a huge country, and we're told that the population is becoming very restless. But it's Egypt. They made a deal with Israel. And then there's Jordan. They made a deal. They have a deal. And then the Christian element of Lebanon who worked with Israel several times, tried to kill off portions of their own population. So you look at these countries, have to kind of remember all this. We're seeing interesting phenomena. Phil, you've heard about this, the Red Sea. Have you saw the name of it? It's called Operation Prosperity Guardian.
Yes, and the Red Sea is all of a sudden in the news because the Americans have a little problem. Well, Israel has a little problem in the Red Sea, and they don't seem to be able to do anything about it.
The reports are that no sooner did they form it and declare it, and actually Defense Minister Blair said that we're going to send a couple of naval officers to stand on the poop deck of an American ship because we got to help read those maps. I tell you, you talk about courage and leadership. Two Canadian officers on the poop deck is pretty important. And we're laying it out there. This is our moment of truth, Canada. Join us on the poop deck. Anyway, they hardly got this statement out of their mouths. Then France said, oh, actually, we're not with you guys. And then Spain said, no, we're not going. And now Iran says, well, there's one country called Bahrain, and you guys are traitors. So my guess is the Bahrain Navy is not going to be much of a factor.
And then also Italy announced that they're not going either.
Right on time.
Yeah.
Confirming a lot of American prejudice. But that's really great. So that's the story. I mean, this, and probably maybe we should help out with nomenclature. There's an overuse of the word Houthi, in my opinion. These are the people of Yemen. If you do not remember, once upon a time in the 1970s, there was a country called the People's Democratic Republic of Yemen. They have really quite a history, and they seem to be touchy about people stepping on their rugs. And so they began to fire at ships and capture ships. And apparently it's not a simple matter to do something about them. You know, when America announces things, people think it's like a Hollywood movie, and they imagine these really big ships with two Canadian officers on board, and they're just going to sail down and they're going to knock out all these little Arab boats. But these guys have missiles, and they have submarines, and they seem to know what they're doing. And somebody pointed out, if you get a conflagration in the Red Sea, you better kiss your economy goodbye. I mean, we're all going to be kind of finding out what it's like to be a Gazan. It's extremely dangerous. And you can't win this by saying, we're going to have a meeting at the White House. Actually, if you want to get out of this, you better learn to treat people respectfully. So anyway, that's, to my mind, is a big part of this got to be addressed. On the matter, I want to make sure I say something about Net Beebe that I learned from his book. I think I said on the show last week that Beebe was laughing about how he had outsmarted Bill Clinton. And he said, I really pissed him off. And then he chuckled about it. I really sometimes wonder, is he kidding himself? Because he might be in for a shock. But anyhow, here he says, he's talking in his book about who backs him. And this has to do with the subject of Zionism. As you know, Phil, there are people saying that if you're anti-Zionist, you're anti-Semitic. So a lot of us are having trouble with this because the majority of Zionists in the United States, people calling themselves Zionists, are Christians. Gets a little complicated. So here's what he said. Landing in Washington in 98, I prepared for my next round of discussions with the president. My first meeting was with the Reverend Jerry Falwell. Jerry Falwell, the evangelical leader and one of Israel's staunchest supporters. Lucky you, Israel. With other Christian organizations, he assembled a packed house in DC's Mayflower Hotel. That gave me a rousing welcome. Evangelical support for the restoration of the Jews in the Holy Land has deep roots, stretching back all the way back to the Christian pilgrims who visited over the last two millennia. In the 19th century, British, American, and European clergymen started agitating for the return of the Jews to the land of Israel. Christian Zionists even preceded Jewish Zionists and were quick to support their cause. In 1904, one of Herzl's closest associates, the Anglican priest, William Heschler, was the only person who was allowed to join Herzl's family around his deathbed. It was to him that Herzl whispered his parting words to his followers: "Give my regards to all of them and tell them that I gave my heart's blood to my people." Evangelical agitation for the ingathering of the exiles and the Jewish restoration in the Holy Land became politically forceful in America in the closing decades of the 19th century. William Blackstone, a self-ordained evangelical minister and close associate of Dwight Moody, the evangelist leader of the day, drafted the Blackstone Memorial, a petition asking President Benjamin Harrison to use his influence on behalf of the Jewish people. He called on the president to persuade European leaders to prevail upon the Ottoman Sultan to open the province of Palestine for Jewish settlement and the creation of a national home. Why not give Palestine back to them? Again, according to God's distribution of nations, it is their home, an inalienable possession from which they were expelled by force. And he went on, why should not the powers, which under the Treaty of Berlin in 78 gave Bulgaria to the Bulgarians and Serbia, with a V, to the Serbians, now give Palestine back to the Jews? These provisions, as well as Romania provinces, as well as Romania, Montenegro, and Greece, were wrested from the Turks and given to their natural owners. Does not Palestine as rightfully belong to the Jews? Among the 431 Americans who signed the petition were John D. Rockefeller. Oh, by the way, I'm reading Bibi Netanyahu. This is Bibi. He's the authority. John D. Rockefeller, J.P. Morgan, future President William McKinley, Chief Justice Melville Fuller, and many congressmen. So there it is. It's kind of important that Bibi is very strong on the point about Christian Zion. And, you know, it's troubling because he later mentions, by the way, this gentleman, Hagee, Pastor Hagee. You know Mr. Hagee, Phil? You know about
him? I don't. So let's talk about Pastor Hagee. Let's find out about him.
You read about him?
No, I haven't.
You met him? I thought I heard you say you met him. No.
I have not heard about him, no.
You saw him. Okay, I'm sorry. Hagee is the biggest fish in the barrel at the moment. I shouldn't have said that, should I? He's a large fish. And He was there when they transferred the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem. Heiji is an evangelist who believes that we're going to be, that the true Christians, followers of Christ, are going to be raptured into heaven after the ingathering of the Jews. And by the way, this is discussed in Bibi's book, because Bibi says a lot of people ask him, are you crazy? Because he doesn't deny that there's the view of the evangelicals is that they will have all the Jews return to Israel, and then that will bring the Messiah. And the Messiah, of course, will pass final judgment, and you will be given a chance to join or quit or not join. And really only the best of the best will be hovered up or raptured. That is to say, everybody else goes to hell. It's a relative, I would call it, I hate to be blunt about it, it sounds pretty anti-Semitic, because there's only one God and it belongs to one particular group. And the others are going to go to hell, which is not nice. But so Bibi says his answer, when people ask him, well, why are you making an alliance with this guy, these people? And he says, we will, on the matter of what will happen after the ingathering, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. If that's not an answer from New Jersey, I never heard one. That is straight New Jersey. Yeah, we'll cross that bridge. We're doing okay. Hey, I'm driving. So in other words, it's all kind of a sick joke. But Heiji began his wonderful career supporting George Wallace for president. And his slogan was, segregation today, segregation tomorrow, segregation forever in the United States, referring to Black Americans. And Heiji didn't say, oh, I'm sorry, I'm ashamed. No, Heiji is Heiji. So anyway, I just want to remind everybody, it's a central to Bibi's book, so it's fair is fair. He talks about it. We should talk about it. Because in fact, and Phil, you know this, Donald Trump, his right arm politically are the born again and the evangelicals, living proof. Yes.
That's absolutely true. And then Donald can do or say whatever they want. They love him. And that seems to be okay with Bibi, you know.
Bibi has signed up with him. He said he used him against Clinton and he enjoyed it. So this is where we are. I just think it's important to call this out because I'm really, it's not a big subject. But people are trying to leverage issues like anti-Semitism, which is serious. And there are many ugly anti-Semites. By the way, in my opinion, evangelicals with that school of thought are deeply anti-Semitic. I don't know how else you say it. But they're very powerful. When they had this thing that in Washington, where they had the Congress people come out, Schumer, Senator Schumer, and the Republicans, Democrats joined hands. I think the vice president was there. Heiji was a feature speaker. Please go and have a look at that, by the way. If you haven't seen it, go and have a look. That's the burning issue on that point. There's some other matters we want to talk about. It is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT. This thing of, thank goodness we have internet, Phil. We have Canada now very excited about a trial going on for a man named Jimmy Lai in Hong Kong, because Canada thinks that Hong Kong is sort of belongs to us still, because we were all part of the empire together. And the empire was so much better than China today. It was just marvelous compared to China today. It was just lovely. It was the British Empire. And we're still trying to protect everything that the king and queen ever promised us in terms of our rights as subjects. And Jimmy Lai has become the face. And I have a headline for the Globe and Mail. And here's what bothers me. He's described as pro-democracy, pro-democracy media tycoon. Media tycoon, he has $1 billion. He's a billionaire. So as you know, media tycoons are on the side of freedom. And he's pro-democracy. So Google it. I put Jimmy Lai, Donald Trump, and up came Jimmy Lai, and he's talking about Donald Trump. And he says, Biden is kind of a wishy-washy guy. The man we need and that I support is Donald Trump. The Globe never calls Donald Trump pro-democracy. But you remember, Phil, when those demonstrations were going on, you had the kids with the slingshots and policemen being attacked. By the way, nobody lost their life after all that violence. The Hong Kong police seemed to be rather professional. They handled it. They settled the matter. So now we have, and Jimmy Lai didn't like what happened. But while those demonstrations were going on, every time there was any large one, they had English signs and photographs of Trump. All of them. They weren't the minority. They were at the core of the people in Hong Kong who caused all the disruption, which delighted the Globe and the Toronto Star just wet themselves in enthusiasm, jumping up and down. It was Donald Trump. And he remains today their favorite. They consider Biden not willing to kill a bunch of Chinese to make them and put them back in power. I think they're wrong, right? Because I think Joe Biden perfectly willing to kill a lot of Chinese. But he talks out of both sides of his mouth. They really prefer a guy like Trump, who doesn't know how to talk about it, out of both sides of his mouth. He knows how to lie, but he doesn't talk out of both sides of his mouth. And so I want him to stop calling the guy pro-democracy, unless they're going to say the same about Donald Trump. When I read their editorials, they seem to be so scared of Trump that they agreed that he should be arrested and never allowed to run for office. Have you noticed that, Phil?
Yes, I've noticed that. And I also noticed that a judge in Colorado says, we're not going to let him run for office in Colorado.
There's a heroic judge. Why should the American people vote for a guy? He's taking him off the ballot. You know, by the way, Eugene Debs ran for president. And he'd been convicted of being a traitor. And he got more than 1 million votes at a time when 1 million votes are quite a bit. I'll bet he gets, yeah, I think Debs did a lot better than any of the green and progressive and left-wing people now. But anyway, America was not afraid to have an election. Now they're afraid to have an election. On the Globe and the Star are petrified, but they don't link Jimmy Lai to Donald Trump. So I'm saying they're misrepresenting this guy, and it's a disgrace that they're doing it. I think most Canadians actually figured out on their own, but here we are, modern times. If it weren't for the internet, I guess we'd think what the Globe thinks. Oh, well, we'd have to read between the lines. Again, this is the Taylor Report. By the way, they're also picking on a Canadian judge, McLaughlin. They ran a cartoon of her being held in the, the National Endowment for the Democracy. Somebody, a reader called in and said, the National Endowment for Democracy supports Jimmy Lai. Now, if that doesn't prove he's for democracy, I mean, what else? And as you know, that's funded by the United States Congress, who accuses China of genocide, calls for more weapons for Taiwan, says we should send warships into the Taiwan Straits, and etc. We are a crummy, backwater, parochial bunch of imperialists is what we actually are. And that would be my closing theme here. We need a dramatic change in policy, and Canadians have to show some courage. Ramsey Clark used to say when he was on our show, please speak up. Please say something to help the American people. Quit agreeing with us. So when they call you up and say, arrest Meng Wanzhou and destroy a piece of your economy and lose out on the advanced technology, tell them no. Do it politely, because you don't want the Marines running around on them. Politely, tell them no. Because only if people tell them no are we going to be saved. American empire is not going to stop being a stinking empire. That's all it knows. That's all it is. And being a member of Five Eyes doesn't make us safe. Being a member of Five Eyes merely involves us in a criminal gang, and the little guys get stomped on first. I want to remind everybody. So we owe it to the American people, and we owe it to the Canadian people to say, this is the wrong course. Let us join the majority of the people of the world, which includes people like the Russians and the Chinese, and let's start working together to solve the world's problems, and let's have free trade. Let us do what is right. It's the only way you're going to save Canada, if you want to save Canada, only way you save the United States. United States is a drunk, and it has to be sobered up, drunk with power. This is Tater Report. I want to thank Phil Conlon and Tony Leah, and a mystery song is going to be coming up too. We'll see you next week. We are shooting rockets.